Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Lisa Mullins.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. We've been hearing a lot this week about past presidents and about great speeches, and for good reason. This week marks the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy and the 150th anniversary of President Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. In a moment, we'll hear about JFK's commitment to the arts. But we're going to start with a Massachusetts connection to the Gettysburg Address.
President Lincoln's effort to reunite a nation torn in half by the long, bloody Civil War is considered one of the greatest speeches in American history. But Lincoln wasn't even the keynote speaker that day at Gettysburg. That honor belonged to Edward Everett of Boston. He was a former congressman, senator, governor of Massachusetts, and president of Harvard University. He's also the namesake of Everett Square in Dorchester.
Joining me now to talk about Everett and the speech no one remembers is Richard Catula. He's a professor emeritus of communication at Northeastern University and author of the book The Eloquence of Edward Everett. Welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
No, thank you very much.
So the Gettysburg Address came right in the middle of the Civil War. Why was Edward Everett and not the president of the United States scheduled to be the keynote speaker that day?
Edward Everett was America's most famous orator at the time. And so when the Commission of the States gathered to meet, they took nominations to see who would be the speaker at Gettysburg. All 19 states nominated Edward Everett.
Well, let's talk about what he said that day, because one of the most striking differences between the two speeches was their length. Lincoln's Gettysburg Address took all of 2 minutes to deliver. Everett spoke for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So what did he say? What did he need 2 hours to say?
Edward Everett spoke from memory, gave all of his speeches from memory, so he delivered this speech for 2 hours from memory to about 15,000 people, the wives, the sons, the brothers, the loved ones of the people who died at Gettysburg.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke about each of the 3 days of the battle, and he named names. When people would hear their son or their loved one's name mentioned, they would be so proud of that person.
Well, we do have the text of the speech that Edwards delivered at Gettysburg that day. He talked about, among other things, the horrors of the battlefield.
It was a saying of the Duke of Wellington that next to a defeat, the saddest thing was a victory. The horrors of the battlefield after the contest is over, the sights and sounds of woe. Let me throw a pall over the scene which no words can adequately depict to those who have not witnessed it, and on which no one who has witnessed it and who has a heart in his bosom can bear to dwell. One drop of balm alone, one drop of heavenly life-giving balm, mingles in the bitter cup of misery.
And then he finished the speech by talking about who was responsible for the war. He blamed the South. And by talking about the bravery of the soldiers who lived and died there.
Wow. So what made him such a powerful orator? I mean, what do we know about the language that he used, why he was so good at this?
Edward Everett really gave his first speech at the age of 3.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was always a great speaker. Then he went to Harvard at the age of 13, where he studied classical rhetoric under the great John Quincy Adams. And John Quincy Adams, he was training that first generation of Americans who were born in America and who followed up the founders. And they were going to lead America to its greatness. And so Edward Everett was John Quincy Adams' greatest pupil. They recognized in Edward Everett a certain stateliness, a certain ability to stand above the crowd and to say what people would have said themselves if they had had the ability to do so.
Well, as we know, history has judged Lincoln's speech as sort of the great speech. So history says that Lincoln upstaged Everett. I'm curious, though, because I've read about the Gettysburg Address that at the time it didn't get such favorable reviews. Did Edward Everett's speech get favorable reviews at the time?
Well, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, when he sat down, he looked at his aide, Ward Lamon Hill, and he said, "Hill, that speech didn't scour. The people didn't like it, but the people did like it." There was a mixed review. Lincoln's enemies, naturally, didn't like it. Lincoln's friends did like it, and the crowd loved it. And they also loved Everett's address. And then Everett wrote to Lincoln the next day after Lincoln gave his speech and said, "I wish, sir, that I could have said in 2 hours what you said in 2 minutes."
so he appreciated the president's brevity.
Right. But what they don't say is that Lincoln wrote back to Everett and said, "Sir, what you delivered yesterday was a masterpiece. It was everything that I could have hoped for." I see these two addresses as complementary in their own way. Edward Everett spoke about the occasion, and he spoke to the people who were there. Lincoln never mentioned Gettysburg, but he mentioned the word nation 5 times mm-hmm. in his address. So Lincoln's speech rose above the occasion. Lincoln spoke about America, the nation. He went back to the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. And he drew his words from the Declaration, whereas Edward Everett drew his words from the Constitution. And after the oration, David Wills, who organized the whole event, took both speeches and he had them reproduced in a pamphlet. And that pamphlet was used as a recruiting tool all around the United States. And my great-granduncle, as a matter of fact, was recruited based upon that pamphlet. In Illinois, a month after the Gettysburg Address. So they were both very successful, and they were both well-received. It's just that Lincoln's speech tended to answer the question that Americans were asking at that time, which is, what does it mean to be an American?
That's Richard Catula. He's a professor emeritus of communications at Northeastern University and author of the book, The Eloquence of Edward Everett. Thank you.
Thank you.
The men who create power make an indispensable contribution to the nation's greatness. But the men who question power make a contribution just as indispensable.
President John F. Kennedy traveled to Massachusetts for the last time on October 26, 1963. That was just 1 month before he was assassinated. He received an honorary degree from Amherst College, and he spoke at the groundbreaking of the school's Robert Frost Library.
Today, as part of our series looking back at major moments of the Kennedy's presidency, we're going to listen to a speech he delivered about the importance of the arts in the life of a nation and about the importance of one artist in particular. WBUR's Kelly Horan takes us there.
Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference.
Kennedy rejected Ted Sorensen's speech for the occasion as thin and stale. He wrote a new one en route to the event on Air Force One with Arthur Schlesinger. Privilege is here, Kennedy tells his audience, and with privilege goes responsibility. It's a familiar refrain from a president known for his call to service. But Kennedy's remarks this day are more personal. He has come to pay tribute to a friend.
For Robert Frost was one of the granite figures of our time in America. He was supremely two things, an artist and an American. A nation reveals itself not only by the men it produces, but also by the men it honors, the men it remembers.
Robert Frost composed a poem for Kennedy's inauguration that predicted that Kennedy's would be, as he wrote, a golden age of poetry and power.
And it's hardly an accident that Robert Frost coupled poetry and power. For he saw poetry as the means of saving power from itself. When power leads man towards arrogance, poetry reminds him of his limitations. When power narrows the areas of man's concern, poetry reminds him of the richness and diversity of his existence. When power corrupts, poetry cleanses.
But the poet also questioned power. When Frost returned from meeting Nikita Khrushchev in the summer of 1962, he told reporters that the Soviet leader had told him that Americans were, as he put it, too liberal to fight. Kennedy never forgave him. Even when Frost was on his deathbed in January 1963, the president refused to speak to him. So this speech is also an apology.
If sometimes our great artists have been the most critical of our society, it is because their sensitivity and their concern for justice, which must motivate any true artist, makes him aware that our nation falls short of its highest potential. I see little of more importance to the future of our country and our civilization than full recognition of the place of the artist.
We see how the artist's fidelity has strengthened the fiber of our national life, Kennedy says. It's not empty rhetoric. In a 1962 article about the arts in America for Look magazine, Kennedy wrote that the arts are very close to the center of a nation's purpose. The highest duty of the writer, the composer, the artist, Kennedy says, is to remain true to himself and to let the chips fall where they may. It's a direct reference to Frost.
And the nation which disdains the mission of art invites the fate of Robert Frost's hired man, the fate of having nothing to look backward to with pride and nothing to look forward to with hope.
Kennedy looks forward, he says, to an America which will reward achievement in the arts as we reward achievement in business or statecraft. He lays out a vision for an America respected as much for its civilization as for its strength.
Robert Frost was often skeptical about projects for human improvement. Yet I do not think he would disdain this hope. As he wrote during the uncertain days of the Second War, take human nature altogether since time began, and it must be a little more in favor of man, say a fraction of 1% at the very least, our hold on the planet wouldn't have so increased. Because of Mr. Frost's life and work, because of the life and work of this college, our hold on this planet has increased.
In unscripted remarks later that day, a humble-sounding Kennedy tells his audience that Robert Frost once said not to let the Harvard in me get too important.
Excerpts from John F. Kennedy's speech about the arts and the poet Robert Frost. Our series, November 1963, is produced by WBUR's Kelly Horan with help from George Hicks. You can hear other installments in the series at our website, radioboston.org.
And tune in to WBUR this Friday at 2 for We Knew JFK, Unheard Stories from the Kennedy Archives, featuring never-before-broadcast memories from JFK's confidants recorded just after the assassination. Stay with us. Coming up, a new project at MIT tries to help the long-term unemployed. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.